You're listening to a podcast from Blogging Heads TV.
Hi, Blogging Heads viewers. Do not adjust your television set or your whatever. I am here with, it's Daniel Strauss of Politico, and this is Woodruff and Strauss, and I'm here today with Daniel Strauss, also a Michigan grad who lives in Chicago and from D.C. The parallels here, and like we clearly look exactly alike. Although I think I'm a quarter Jewish. A lot of people think I'm Jewish.
I didn't even know you were a quarter Jewish.
Really? Okay. Well, I get it all the time. I get like you're Jewish constantly.
Well, yeah. I mean, first of all, take it as a compliment. You know,
I want to be part.
There
of the
isn't a higher one, and you know, second of all, you kind of got it going on. You know,
nice product placement right there.
The blue.
The explanation behind this, Daniel is very funny, and he's on the cast of Second City, and because every once in a while I get overly gregarious, I one day friended Daniel, and we became friends, and we missed each other in Michigan by a year, I think, but you knew Gabe Nelson, right?
Yes, I knew
okay.
Gabe, yeah.
And a few other people. Your brother is friends with my friend, Giovanni Rusinello. So,
that's right.
And before we started, you asked me what this was. This is
yeah. Well, I just assumed that was just everybody who you support running for president in 2016. You just put them all up on there, and you're like, this way, I don't, you know, everyone will just know. I like all these guys.
This is an internal Politico tradition. During the campaign cycle, we keep up all the campaign placards and posters we can get, and we added to the tradition this cycle of anytime a candidate drops out, we put an RIP on there. We didn't manage to get a Graham one in time, and he dropped out.
Did he drop
while.
Out?
Yeah.
Can't believe it. I can't believe it, because he was crushing the little kid stage debates.
I know, he was hilarious.
He was really funny.
I mean, like, yeah he was really good at that.
What are those for? Why do they have the little kid stage? None of these guys
okay,
have
here's the
any
thing.
Shot.
Here's the thing. So in the last debate, Rand Paul, one of the candidates I cover, was projected to lose the debate. And by the math, he was not going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And
somehow
that when they announced people making what we call the undercard or happy hour debate and the main stage debate. What? It's polite. What? We don't know.
I like the happy hour debate. It just implies that a nation is paying rapt attention to what's going on.
We think they are. All right. We think they should. And go to Politico.com. Read Daniel Strauss at Politico.com after you go to Second City and see Daniel Strauss on the stage.
Read Daniel Strauss's bio.
Oh, Jesus. Anyway, so they changed the debate criteria to allow Rand in. Mm-hmm. And we, like a lot of news outlets, were like, what the fuck? And they said, in the spirit of inclusiveness, we decided to let Rand in. There's no real...
Spirit of inclusiveness?
Yes. There's no...
Well, nothing says Republican Party like inclusiveness, so that makes perfect sense to me.
Oh, Jesus. There's no rhyme or reason, but you're right. There is an odd sort of system for these debates, and it does sort of kill campaigns. And... you know, Rand Paul's people were very, very interested in lobbying to be in the main stage debate. But I don't know. You watched you yourself said you watched in the happy hour debate, and
well,
it's like Night at the Apollo with Lindsay on there, right?
I mean, I've just watched some of the highlights. And yeah, I mean, he's hilarious. I mean, like, I don't know. I watched before the CNBC one. Because remember that one started like way late, which was just like a sign of good things to come. And they were like interviewing Santorum and talking about how he thought the debate went. And I was like, what could be less relevant than this? Like, why is this discussion even like, who cares how Rick Santorum felt about the little kid table debate?
The thing is, Santorum, what's remarkable? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but we have them. I mean, there are just so many. There are 13 candidates right now, Daniel.
Yeah,
13.
I love it. I wish there were still more on. I wish they had. What'd they start with? 16?
Yeah, 17.
I wish they still had all 17 on.
Really?
State.
You missed Scott Walker.
Yeah.
You know,
Walker. He was just a blast. Who
Jindal,
else is gone?
Perry.
Jindal. Yeah,
Bobby.
These guys all had such a good shot of being the president.
Hey, early on, I mean, the biggest fall from grace was Scott Walker, who everyone was seriously like, oh, Scott Walker is actually going to do this. And, like, he's in the top tier. It was Walker, Rubio, and Bush. And Rubio's right. still in the top tier, but you can, you know, I think you can rejigger that to put Trump and Rubio up there.
Yeah, well, I mean, any preconceived notions anybody had about this campaign have been completely thrown out the window by
and you're watching. I always feel a little awkward asking you, like, when we get together, because I always feel like I'm kind of poking at you in the way that I hate when people do about, like, what's funny? Let's talk about funny. Funny, funny, mm-hmm. funny. So I want to apologize in front of my mom, because she's only one. And trust me, she's going to tune out, because she's complained in the past that these episodes are too long. Sorry.
Oh, I thought that I'm not funny enough.
No, you are very funny. I say that. You're the funny one. You're the funny Daniel Strauss.
This guy, I've just had enough. I want to watch him. Just please, you know, get somebody else on the show.
So, I mean, I wanted to, for a little while, and then we can go back to serious stuff, talk about, like, humor in this cycle. I mean, is it... Because last cycle, every time we get together, I try and, like, share the weirdest stuff, and I still owe you a full story of the Mississippi Senate race, which was bonkers. But, like, or is
at,
this...
At the very least, I want Herman Cain recording my outgoing message on my voicemail. And that's what I really
it's
want.
It's going to happen. Oh, it's going to happen. He hasn't endorsed yet, actually. Where is Herman?
Hard to believe he hasn't weighed in since politics were such a huge part of his life.
The last cycle, 12 was insane, right? Where 999 was leading the field for a little while. Yeah, you like that.
I love 999.
Is this cycle hilarious? Is it funny? Are you like, I mean, like, is Donald Trump, and that seems to be part of the appeal. Like, our Ben, who's right behind me,
right.
There he is. Okay. I mean, a lot of the people who go to these things go to his events want to be partially entertained.
Like,
And, like, is he funny for you? Do you add him to – are you guys doing skits on that right now?
He's so I'll tell you what I've told relatives and whatnot who asked me about this. It's almost too easy. Uh-huh. Like, he's so ridiculous. He's so outlandish. Also that, like, he is satirizing himself. Like, he is satirizing a presidential candidate. Like, anytime you think he's – and you never really think this, but anytime you think that he's, like, going to get it together and not say something horrible, he's like, I'm really upset that Hillary Clinton used the toilet during a debate. You're like, well, there we go. He did it – like, he just outdoes himself. So, interestingly enough, we mention his name, I think, in one of the sketches, and then we try to do – since the show runs for, like, 8 months, we try to do the majority of our political stuff through our improvisation to keep it fresh.
Yeah.
So there is a segment of the show where we kind of open up to the audience and say, you know, there's two ways I'll do it. If I don't feel like doing something about Trump, I'll say, what was an issue that was important to you in the 2015 election? Because we're talking like we're in the future.
Right.
And if I – if I'm in the mood to talk about Trump, I'll say, what was something you remember from the 2015 election? And inevitably, that always gets Trump. And he's ripe for comedy. We usually get some pretty good comedy out of his wall. You know, everybody knows about his wall. And then it's interesting, like, what will get a response from the audience and when they're kind of like, all right, we don't – like, I think with the Muslim people, like, maybe we should just have all the Muslims register and then get them to leave the country. I think he kind of crossed a line from, like, ha ha ha, to, like, this guy's getting a little scary.
Right.
So I think people are still ready to laugh. I think people are also genuinely afraid, starting to get really afraid that this guy's been leading for so long, and it seems like the more awful the things that come out of his mouth are, the more he shoots up. I mean, I'll tell you this. We wrote this show from September to end of November. We purposefully didn't include a ton of Trump material because we all assumed he'd be out of the race by now.
Yeah.
That, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, we all were like,
you are the only one. We, you know, I was not. A lot of reporters in D.C. for a long time were like, Trump is going to, I think my earliest Trump story at Politico, and maybe the first sort of lead story I wrote was of Trump and how it's a flash in the pan. And we have a pollster up there saying, second paragraph, everybody needs to calm down. Good job, me. So we hear every Republican strategist I've ever talked to when I asked about Trump says, he's going to fade, go, relax. And I started just responding like, how is that going to happen?
Yeah. How are any of you guys going to beat him?
And every poll, Betsy and I have talked about this, every poll, all the data indicates that Trump is a serious contender for the nomination. If it were not Trump, the CW in Washington would be, oh yeah, X person is probably going to win, and there would be an endless supply of think pieces about what this means. But there's still that lingering now, view that he will dissipate somehow. I don't know how he's going to do it.
I don't know how you can be wanting to elect the next president of the United States and even for a half a second entertain the idea of voting for this guy. It is mind-blowing to me. But also, by the same token, I think we have people in the House every night, not a lot, but I think we have people at the theater who are planning on voting for him.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can't tell. There was a guy the other night where we mentioned him, and a guy like in the second row started clapping, and we kind of both looked at him, the two of us on stage, and we're like, are you serious? And he like kept clapping. And my scene partner, Rashad, was like, okay, you're very alone right now. And, it usually is like one or two people out of a room of 300. But still, like, the notion of anybody being like, yep, that's my horse in the fight. Like, you're crazy. You're out of your mind.
And stop me if any of this will get you in trouble or not. But are there partisanship rules? Can you say, do you get a sense of what kind of people lean who go to Second City? On the road, and do you have to be nonpartisan?
I'm allowed to be as partisan as I want. We're not a political think tank. We're a satire factory. Uh-huh. So obviously, we're going to lean left. I would say it's a real mix. We have a joke in the show that pretty much every night will tell us what our audience is, and sometimes it's a more conservative house. Sometimes it's more left-leaning. I would say, honestly, I think we lean more to the right. I think
really?
I think the majority of what we get is tourists mm-hmm. coming in to see the show from wherever, who've heard about the history of the building. The joke is, again, it's in that same scene where we're talking about how we're from the future, and we say, the news is so boring now. Ever since we got rid of Fox News, we had world peace like that. And then either they laugh or they boo. And whichever one of those you hear more of, you go, okay, now I know what we're working with tonight. More often than not, they laugh. But there's always, a few. I mean, on any given night, it's split right down the middle.
I was really excited about this cycle, actually, because in any given cycle in a primary, you'll have like three or four candidates, and I operate. I mean, the attitude that the editors have here is that there is no reason for you to ever not have something to do, because there are 1,000 stories in your average presidential cycle, and it's easy to get about 10% of that, and there's just a ton of crazy shit going on that most people will never know about. And we have 13 candidates now. And it's a little hard because a lot of, like, the excuse you get a lot of the time is that Trump is sucking all the oxygen out. So, those stories are a little bit harder to get than usual. If Trump were not in the race, would Jeb be funny? Would there be endless jokes about how he's, like, kind of, like, flopping or, like, oh, is Jeb funny?
We have a Jeb joke in the show.
Yeah. is Sanders funny? Is O'Malley funny?
We have a Sanders joke in the show as well. I mean, and those are pre-written jokes that we're like, these guys will be around, so we feel comfortable leaving them in. We have an entire blackout about Sanders. I think Sanders is hilarious. I also think he's wonderful. But just kind of him as like this cranky old man is something that's really funny to me.
Yeah.
Jeb, we wrote an entire piece during the process of writing the show called Sad Old Jeb that was about, like, it was basically It's a Wonderful Life with Jeb Bush.
Sad with, old Jeb?
With, yeah, with the twist at the end being that, like, the village, or everyone who he lives with tells him he should kill himself. Because he's so sad and pathetic. Well, it's just, like, this dude, poor guy who's, like, I mean, I'm a Bush. I'm going to roll into this thing. I'm going to get the nomination. And all of a sudden, he shows up the year that Donald Trump is there. And Trump is basically like, his first order of business seemed like, I'm taking you down. And he did it in a second. So, like, what you get is just, like, this mopey, sad dude out there. And he had a little more energy in the last debate. But, like,
yeah.
The moment that I think of is when he went after Rubio. And he was like, you know, you're not voting. And
Rubio essentially body slammed him.
Right. I mean, Rubio's like, well, somebody nope. told you to say that. And you don't actually think that. And Jeb just goes, no. Like, he barely, like, he's just like, oh, man, it happened again. Like, I wasn't even talking to the Trump guy. Like, he's so sad. So we put up this scene, like, once. And like, it hit. Like, it definitely resonated with people. Like, the idea of, like, a sad old Jeb Bush who nobody likes.
What is, and, you know, to round this out, I have two more questions and then I want to get to the main thing, the thing I really want to talk about. Mm-hmm. But is Hillary funny and is Ted funny? I guess those are my big things for different reasons. Like, Hillary has been through the shit so much. Like, I feel like there are people on your sister sort of stage, Saturday Night Live, that can still do, but it's hard to do her because the pantsuit jokes are tired. And then Ted, that guy, I mean, the philosophy in DC is that guy is going to be around a long time. He's very, very, very smart.
Mm. is that real?
Yeah, no, that is, well, to explain this, Daniel, like a year ago, he was one of the most hated men in Washington. And now he's pulling, he's a top tier candidate. He's pulling at the front of the field. He's successfully navigated Trump, who could have eclipsed him as not being the most conservative guy in the room. Listen, man, whatever you say, I will put it down here. Ted Cruz is a very, very smart guy.
Hmm. It's the first time I've ever heard anybody say that. So.
Okay.
But I'll take your word for it. Is he funny? Yes, he's funny, but I think it's what you just said, like with Trump, like sucking the, like, it's just not going to work as well as Trump. It's that question. What's something you remember from the 2015 election? I've never once gotten Cruz. I've gotten Sanders one time.
Yeah.
Every other time I've gotten Trump. So, like, is Ted Cruz doing equally ridiculous things? Well, no, not really. No, because but he is saying things like, I want to carpet bomb them into oblivion and see if sand glows. Okay. If Trump wasn't around, would we be running with that one? Yeah, probably. That, I mean, that's a ridiculous thing to say. Hillary. I mean, here's the thing. Like, the Democrats, the three Democratic candidates, and I'm obviously completely biased because I'm a liberal, but, like, I think they're all really solid. There's only three of them. They're all super polite to each other. So there's, like, not, like, a ton, you know what I mean? It's like, a ton to use there. Like,
yeah, every time, like, things get kind of heated with Sanders and Hillary, they, like, shake hands and they're like, but we're all friends here.
He apologized to her. Like on stage at the last debate, the guy was like, so clearly the moderator was like, oh, this is going to start some shit. Then he's like, do you owe her an apology? Yes, I apologize. He's like, oh. Okay, great. And then they go to Hillary and they're like, how do you feel about that? She's like, well, you know, it was frustrating. I was sorry that it happened, you know, but it's fine. Like, well, I mean, if anything, the bit is just like them all being like super nice to each other, but in reality wanting to kill each other.
Yeah.
I think it's exactly what you said. Trump is just sucking. Like, you could go after them, but like it all has to be through the lens of Trump. He is the dominant story, the dominant personality of this election right now, no matter how you look at it.
I mean, I miss, you know, I miss the long shot candidates. I miss Lincoln Chafee and I miss Jim I Killed a Guy Webb, you know?
Well, him and Ben Carson, right?
Yeah, him and Ben Carson.
Right? Well, Jim Webb was just like the, like, Jim Webb was like, that debate, you're just like, what are you doing? Why are you fighting so hard to get time to say nothing? And then Chafee was just like your goofy uncle hanging out on the other end, just like smiling, happy, just waiting, hoping they come
uncle,
to him.
Uncle
like,
Lincoln, yeah. Just, you know, that's just, yeah.
And then he said one thing, I can't remember what it was now, but he said one thing that was just like totally off base. And I was like, all right, you're not going to stick around. I think it was about the emails. I think it was like,
you need integrity or something like
and
that.
At that moment, everyone was like, well, that's the end of you.
Right. And Hillary was like, it was like, Hillary, do you want to respond? And she was just like, no.
Yeah, she legitimately said that no. Awesome. That was
awesome.
Dismissive.
Okay, now we got to do this. This is the very scientific part of the session, the episode, and this is what I've been really excited about. Daniel, there's like a lot of politics going on. It's a lot of divisive politics, and in our hometown, Chicago, Rahm is in some shit. Mm. I think that's our ace Chicago reporter Natasha Kerecki. It was a big deal, and I'm a big fan of hers. Has been covering this aggressively. This Laquan McDonald shooting. Rahm dismissed his police commissioner, who Gary McCarthy, who's like this nationally renowned figure, and Rahm is like, it's not just critics in the super left. There are a lot of people protesting him. My dad went out to a protest hoping to get arrested. My mom, that was an interesting car ride. You know, my mom being like, you don't have to do this. And my dad being like, I'm going to get arrested. You know, when is it not funny anymore? When does it get,
it's not funny
like,
right now.
Like, when is politics just like, when is it ha ha, or when is it like get, cause I feel like we're at a point with both Rahm, this prominent Democrat, and Trump where things are just like Hillary Clinton or not Hillary. Wow. Tina Fey once talked in about doing Palin, and she said like it was fun at first, and then it started to get weird, and the rallies got weird. Are we at that point where like things are? It's getting weird, you know, and like banning Muslims, you know, this thing with the shooting, a police officer shooting an African American boy 16 times.
Yeah.
And the Emanuel administration kind of covered, like, are we at that point in Chicago or nationally where it's just like not funny anymore?
It's
and
not
I know
funny.
Your humor is like, you like to go to the edge there, but it's not funny anymore.
It's not funny. No. Okay. And you can't make it right. Funny. I mean, something like that specific event, like Laquan McDonald, like it's, there's nothing funny about it. You know, I mean, I guess you can find, there's not really anything funny in the cover-up. There's not really anything about Rahm Emanuel right now that's particularly funny. Now, that doesn't mean that there's not work on the main stage and the ETC stage at Second City that is about Rahm Emanuel and about what's going on. There is. We have a scene in our show that addresses race relations. But you can't really talk about somebody getting shot 16 times and expect to have roaring laughter. You have to just basically, you couch it in other jokes, and then you put the point of view in there in a way that's hopefully digestible and calls for the audience to be quiet for a little while. There's, like I said, there's material about it, but it's not like rip-roaring funny material like a like a Trump scene would probably still be
so Trump is still funny, so it's not,
he's walking a line. It's day to day. I'm telling it's day, because you know, I don't know, I said it the other night, I was like, I said this on stage, I was like, you know, he was real funny for a while and then it was just not fucking funny anymore, you know. And people did, you know, applaud that. I think that the reason that Trump is still okay, Trump is still funny because Trump is not in office, and there is still the pretty strong belief that Trump will not be the next president of the United States. Regardless of how well he runs his campaign, he cannot beat Hillary Clinton, and every single poll says that Bernie Sanders would essentially slaughter him. So he doesn't have a chance of winning the presidency. If anything, he ends up running as an independent, because I don't think that the RNC will give the guy the nomination anyway, and then he just splits the vote.
There have been more serious rumblings than you would expect right now, and more indicators that like there is some establishment backlash. There is like there's some shit going on. The Washington Post, Bob Costa, reported like 2 weeks ago that there was a sit down with like the big names in Republican politics, and like a convention came up. There's like some talk.
Yeah. Right. Well, they don't want him. That's not the guy that they want. So, you know, if he runs as an independent, he'll just confirm the conspiracy theory that he's actually a liberal who's running to, you know, solidify the election for the Democrats. But anyway, that's why he's still funny. He is not currently in power. Like, mm-hmm. whatever he does, whatever he runs his mouth, that does not affect us yet.
Right.
President Trump, that may be less funny.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know, depending on how many of the things he follows through on.
President Trump with Republican control of the Senate and Congress, the party he identifies with, having carte blanche, even though, like, Speaker Ryan, I doubt, would get along with. I really don't see Paul Ryan.
Well, credit to Paul Ryan. He's even come out and spoken and said, publicly about disagreeing with him.
Right.
It's interesting.
And Ryan is not the most combative Republican in the party. He's usually he doesn't get into huge fights when it's not about, you know, sort of policy.
Well, he said before, he was like, I don't usually comment on what's going on in the election, but I feel the need to say something about this. It's interesting what gets people to, you know, it seemed like a lot of the Republican Party after that Muslim thing came out and were like, no way.
Yeah.
You know, some of the previous stuff he did, I guess, talking about Mexicans and, you know, Megyn Kelly being on her period, that didn't bug people too much. But whatever it takes, I suppose. Point being, Rahm Emanuel in office right now, looking like this cover-up happened around the time of the election, which, as you recall, went to a runoff with Chuy Garcia, and he won that election. So people feel lied to. People feel deceived. And for something like this to happen in Chicago, you know, in this city is...
Which is a person of a biracial marriage. I grew up in, like, the best place in Chicago for this. But this city has a long history of tense race relations.
Right. This is not new.
Right.
It's terrible. It's really terrible. And it's very real. And, you know... There's just you learn what you can pull humor out of and where you just kind of have to pick your punches and say, it's going to be hard to make this funny, but I'd like to say something about it. So with regard to that, I think that's the key difference, that one of them is already in power and the other one is just kind of floundering around and everyone's just kind of like, we're going to see how this ends. So it's still okay to laugh at.
I do wonder what. If the Daily, I tried watching the Daily Show, man, and it's just not good now. It's not.
Really?
It's really. Have you watched it since?
No, I have. Over?
Yeah. Well, you know.
Well, I work while it's on. So.
Okay. Well, you can go on the internet and key that up, man.
I used that as an excuse, but it didn't
work. Yeah, it's not. The reason you haven't seen it isn't because you're working. It's because it's not. It's John is not there, and I wonder, like, because John in real life, or my understanding of like. On camera when he's not in the Daily Show personality, he gets kind of grumpy about being like poking and be like, hey, do the funny.
I
do wonder though how he would handle this, because he has tried to be smart funny, but like I don't know how much of this, like, because you know, you explain to like a 5-year-old, the front runner for the Republican nomination is saying we got to keep all Muslims out of the country because of their religion. It's like kind of a bonkers thing.
He would be going right after it.
Right.
He would be going right after it, no question about it. And him and his entire writing team are so freaking smart that The Daily Show for a long time with Jon Stewart, and I do want to say Trevor Noah is a lovely guy and very, very funny, by the way. He played an improv set with us before he got the jobs.
I'm an asshole. Just ignore it. Keep going.
No. But on a strictly comedy note, he is not Jon Stewart.
Yeah.
It is impossible for him to be Jon Stewart. And it's going to be different for a while. And then it's probably going to get really good.
I hope so.
He just has to find his groove and make the show his own. You know what I mean? Anyway, point being, he'd be going right after. I mean, the Daily Show, like, for a long time was like, there were moments where you're like, am I watching a comedy program or am I just watching an opinion news show?
Right.
And he, I'm sure that they would find, I mean, the other thing is like that audience is like the most forgiving audience in the world. Like they just love this dude. They'll friggin' laugh at Photoshop titles.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They, like, like long laugh breaks at like Photoshop titles. So like he can get away with more there than maybe six unknowns can at the Second City in Chicago. But it's true. So like I think without question he would be. I think that's part of the reason that he walked away is he's like I would have to go after this 110%, and I don't know if I have that in me right now.
Yeah. Well, I hope it gets. I just feel like the oxygen sucking is disappointing, and I mean the candidates I'm assigned to. I mean, every day, and I'm like, it's really unhealthy, actually, but like every day, and I'm dreaming about like what's going on in these campaigns and all the stuff we're missing and all the good stories and all the stories about the heroes and the villains just in, I cover the Republican side, just on that side alone, we are missing because so much of this cycle is dominated by this one guy that a lot of the party leaders do not like and say vocally in an unprecedented way he does not represent the Republican Party.
That he's running away with the polls,
except that like he said in the last debate to Jeb, I'm at 42, you're at 3, and Jeb sort of Jeb was sort of like that's true.
He's a sad guy. Sad old Jeb.
I mean, you were right, though. At the end of the cycle, people were gearing up to like write long think pieces and intricacies about two candidates, Hillary and Jeb.
Right.
Didn't happen, man.
Trump took dead aim at him. It was so clear. He took dead aim at him. And Trump is funny. Like, he's an entertainer. And, like, he gets some digs in there at those debates. And you're like, oh, this guy's funny. Now, that's not enough for me to be like, all right, you know what? Yep, that's my guy. I'm going to throw my support behind him. You know, I understand not wanting to vote for Jeb Bush. I understand being like, you know what? I'm good on Bushes. I'm all set on Bushes. I'm all set on Clintons. I'm going to try somebody new. I understand that. But don't let it be because you're like, no, I like the bigot. Which one's the open bigot? That's the one who I like. You know? I don't know.
Did I tell you he called me one time?
Don Trump?
Yeah, he did.
On the phone?
On the phone.
What, did you write something nasty about him?
No, that's a thing. We've reported. I'll make sure we link to the story that we updated. I reported about his crowd size, we reported about how he was criticized for his debate before his like the first or second debate, and he took umbrage by us writing, you know, he was panned by some for the debate, and he thought that meant he lost the debate. So he called in to tell me, I didn't lose the debate, I won the debate every poll. These are the things that matter. And he's very concerned about being told he won and crowd size. Size, and we have a story on this that we'll link to too. Size matters to him. It's, you know, it's in there. Then this.
Well, look at his Twitter feed. It's all like him like responding to like petty criticisms. Like he has the thinnest skin of like anybody walking the planet. Like he'll probably tweet a response to this video being like, look at these two jerks with the same name. I could own them both. Like, it's like, it's pathetic. Like, the guy is running for president, and like, anytime somebody says something bad about him, like, is it Stephanopoulos? George Stephanopoulos?
Yeah.
During the last debate, at the end of the debate, it's like, oh, look, Mr. Trump just tweeted me and called me stupid. And like, he did. There it is. He called him stupid.
That's what the people like that. They think they, you know, they like taking it, telling it like it is, to take Christie's, moniker here. All right, let's switch to the last part of the program. As promised, and you'll like this, Daniel, I think you've seen this on my Facebook. I announced in a previous episode that I would grow a Lando Calrissian mustache.
Oh, wow.
And I don't have it now, but I do have photographic evidence of this as part of the Star Wars premiere. So here it is. Here is me with my Lando.
Oh, that's impressive.
Yeah, that was 2 weeks. And this is my friend Kate, dressed up as Leia. She did a much better Leia. She couldn't convince me to wear the cape, which turned out to be a good thing because we met at a holiday party before that, and I said to her, you wanted me to come here in a fucking cape? she laughed. She was in a dress and changed into Hoth Leia.
That's a pretty good Hoth Leia.
Yeah, it was really good. Bravo, Kate. So I don't know how much detail. It sounds like you have fewer people around you right now than I do. Yep. I thought the movie was effing awesome.
I loved it.
I was worried. Kate in the middle turned to me. I mean, I cried twice, partially because of the big plot twist. Mm-hmm. And partially just because this is like part of our American fairy tales. These are our folk tales, mm-hmm. right here. And I grew up with those fucking VHS tapes, watching them every weekend, every sleepover. It's just over and over again. And the prequels were so bad.
Yeah, they were awful. They were awful.
So to have a movie that was a little similar to A New Hope, man.
Oh, moderately. So you think it was a little similar?
At the end, there's a big fighter scene, and they're like, how does the Empire not figure out, like, every time, like, maybe we shouldn't have, like, one really big vulnerable spot that an handsome ace pilot can, like, navigate through and destroy our whole thing? Like, what, like, how does the Galactic Empire not figure this out, man? This is, like, very inefficient.
I know, that's what my friend Brian said. He was like, it's literally the same thing. It's Death Star again. And they're literally like, it's just bigger. It's the same exact thing, it's just bigger.
They were like, this is the Death Star. And, yeah, you know.
It's just a bigger Death Star.
It's just a bigger Death Star.
Stakes are higher on this Death Star. Yeah, it's the first movie again. What's the problem? I love the first movie. I love seeing it again. I mean, I haven't seen it in a long time, so it was nice to see it again with some new, fresh faces. And I loved it. I loved it. It was charming.
So, there was one other thing that I don't think is too big of a spoiler. The painful dialogue between Han and Leia. It's like, oh, our son is gone. Yes, so I returned to the thing I am good at. Yes, you did. Because of our son. And we are apart. But we still love each other. You know, it was like...
Yeah, it wasn't struggling. It wasn't terribly fleshed out. It was a little weird. It seems like this whole thing of like... I don't know. It's like, what, have they not seen each other in a while? Like, if not, why not? Like, what? I don't know.
Because those two were in the movies. Those two were like, they were near, by Return of the Jedi, they couldn't keep their hands off each other.
Well, they're a lot older now. They're a lot older now, and they've fathered a very bad child.
Adam from Girls. How'd you feel about that?
It's a little, didn't quite work.
I thought it was a little awkward, but my friend said, he's supposed to be a petulant child.
Right. And in that regard, it works. I think it's more an issue of, like, he took off the mask so fast. So, I didn't expect him to take the mask off in the first movie.
Yeah.
And when he takes it off, it's just underwhelming. I don't know. It just doesn't... He petulant child, sure, but, like, I think maybe part of it is, like, that happens and you're like, oh, man... This guy is not scary.
Right.
At all. Like, Vader is scary. Like, Kylo Ren is not scary. He's a wimp. And that's part of his character, obviously. But I don't know. I think he could have left the mask on for a little longer.
So, Daniel, you're a father now. Are you?
Oh, yeah, I am.
Yeah. So are you going to – are these going to be your kids' generational movies, you think? If they're, like, roughly the same? Because part of these movies, part of this trilogy is really just, like, it's kind of an update again.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is going to be
– I don't know. Obviously, you know, my daughter is 10 months old. So she's not really allowed to watch television yet, so she doesn't have much of an opinion on it one way or the other. Have to see as she gets older if these are things that she... I mean, they may miss her by a little bit.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, yeah, I mean, unless something else comes along. I mean, who knows? I mean, I don't know. What other films would be defining the generation? I guess the Harry Potter movies? But that's last generation. That's not this generation.
I don't know.
Do kids like these movies?
I don't fucking know, man. I'm like, I have a friend who, like, updates me on what the kids are saying now. Like, kids are saying lit now, I think.
Yeah, they say that, yeah.
It's like, I don't know, man. It's
Fetty
too
Wap.
Hard.
They like Fetty Wap.
What the hell does that mean? They don't like...
I don't know, man.
They don't like Chance the Rapper anymore. He's, like, too establishment now. Like, Vince Mensa. Chance is, like, the establishment rapper now. Like, the edgy ones is, like, Vic Mensa or something. We had an intern. Yeah, I don't, you know, it's getting too hard.
I think Chance is terrific.
Yeah. Well, Chance is also, like, Chance's dad is a deputy chief of staff to Rom, and he's like, there's some, you know, there's some tension here. Yeah.
Well, look, Rom is a Democrat. He's right. A Democrat who was, you know, appointed by President Obama. I mean, this shouldn't, this whole thing is crazy that it's, you know, like, he's not, he's, I guess there's a history of Chicago or Illinois Democrats bringing shame to the party, but this seems to be a
what makes you say that, Daniel?
Well, I think you know what I'm talking about.
Where's Blanco? Is he?
I think he's in prison, is the answer to that question. In a jail cell. For much less, by the way, than this. I mean, the things that, like, that we value as a society are, like, I don't know. I always think of, like Southern Methodist University paid some of their players. Yeah. They lost football operations for a year. Penn State sheltered pedophiles.
Right.
They didn't. They are already, like, back in bowl contention. Like, that's crazy to me. That seems what they did was so clearly worse. I mean, it's the same. I mean, look, it remains to be seen how this whole thing with Rom will shake out. But, like, to me, like, what he did is infinitely worse than selling a seat.
I will say that if and this is not, I got to ask Natasha or other Illinois reporters on this, but, like, do you know who Sheriff Tom Dart is? He's a Cook County sheriff. Okay. He'd been floated to run. He had some national press. Like, if I'm him right now, I'm like, Mayor Dart, it's happening. Like, yeah, it should not be happening. You would expect, I mean, Chicagoans wanted a mayor who got things done. And I feel like they expected, listen, there are going to be some questionable things, but as long as we don't know about it. But this is, like, so horribly immoral.
And it's a shame that Chuy Garcia didn't run a better campaign. And I know he came in on pretty short notice, but his campaign was pretty lackluster. At the debates, he basically, everything he said was just like, this guy's the worst, right? And it was like, come on, you don't have anything else other than that. I mean, he did not stack up well against Trump. So it's a shame. I mean, we'd be dealing with this anyway, I suppose, since it was a cover.
If we were, since we're both Michigan men, and as I explain to everyone I talk to, you won't get far without me reminding them that I went to the University of Michigan. Is Harbaugh funny? How are we going to do?
You know? I mean, he's funny, but, like, he's more like...
like, Royd's funny, right?
Well, he's like he's funny in the way of, like, when you listen to him talk, you're like, what is this guy talking about? But clearly he knows exactly what he's... like, with him, it's like you watch, like, his press conferences and you're like, is he okay? And then, like, every week he fields, like, an amazing-looking football team. You're like, yeah, he's fine.
I mean, we're doing better. There was a lot of hype. I feel like it got a little sky. Like, I thought we might beat Ohio State this year.
Disappointing.
The crushing Michigan State thing was...
That was rough. That was rough, but they should have won that game. Yeah, I mean... that was a fluke play. They had the thing in the bag. Like,
they earned it, you know.
I mean, Michigan just got the nation's number one running back. Committed to Michigan.
It's Walker, right, from New Jersey? Kareem Walker.
He's going to bring it. That's going to be the difference, is he's going to bring in real players, and then he's going to know what to do with them. They already have the number two recruiting class in the nation, ahead of Ohio State.
It's – right. I mean, the amazing thing is how quickly Harbaugh turned around this program that was in the dumps.
People thought they were going to win, like, five to seven games this year. Right. They won 9 games. And by the way, they would have won 10 if something crazy hadn't happened at the end of one of them.
Right.
The only game this year where they got blown out was Ohio State, which is very unfortunate. Mm-hmm. But in every other game, they were competitive all the way through. And these aren't his guys.
Right.
These aren't anybody's guys. Jake Rudock is the quarterback. Who is Jake Rudock?
Jake Rudock was the backup quarterback at the University of Iowa.
Right. Who
apparently is now awesome, too.
And now he's, I know. I don't know where that came from. But, and now he's our starter.
Right.
And has, like, no business starting anywhere and is doing, like, fine. Like, by the end of the year, that kid looked good. He was locating passes. He looked good. So, Harbaugh is a coach, man. He's a real live football coach. And they are going to be fine.
Well, good. Well, listen, Daniel, I hope we can hang out soon. And I will. I need. I owe you beer for all the stuff you've done and all the patience and all the stuff over the years. Thank you so much for coming on this program. I'm gonna go celebrate Christmaska in soon. So, and I will hopefully see you either in Chicago or this summer. I'm gonna run the Chicago Triathlon, and my friend Sam is getting married in Chicago, so I'm gonna be back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me know. Come see the show.
Would love to. Or just, like, buy a beer. Let me buy
that
a beer.
That works, too. That's
Daniel Strauss, Second City actor, very funny man, and just insightful, good dude. Thanks very much for being on the program. This is Daniel Strauss, Woodruff & Strauss. I am signing off till 2016. We'll see you then. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Blogging Heads TV. You can help support this content by remembering to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can subscribe to all Blogging Heads episodes or to a specific program by going to our subscribe page at bloggingheads.tv/subscribe. There you can sign up for podcast downloads via iTunes or Stitcher, or you can subscribe to our email and we'll send you an alert every time we post a new episode.